Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting live from Rochester, Minnesota, following an Ag PhD 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Now workshop. Now, you think about that. I've got Rob Fritz with me today, which is great because, you know what, Rob, every once in a while I need a different co-host here besides Brian, but 101 Ways to Cut Money, it almost seems unthinkable that there'd be that many different things on the farm you could do to save money.
I was actually surprised today we got through all 101. I figured we'd get hung up on one and well, spend an hour and never make it.
It's fun talking about it, though, because we all have these sweet spots in our operation. We say, oh, yeah, here's something I do that saves me money that, you know, my neighbor's not doing or my brother's not doing. But, you know, everybody's got different assets on the farm. Maybe you're great at working on equipment, and by working on your own equipment, you save some money. Or maybe you're really good at spray application and you actually do some spray applications for your neighbors and make a little money there and save money by not having to hire somebody. I think it's interesting with all the different things we're doing on the farm. All right, so we've got a live audience here in Rochester, Minnesota. If you've got a question for us, just raise your hand. We've got a couple people with microphones that'll catch up to you. We got our first question right here. So just say your name and what state you're from.
My name is Kale Hyden, and I'm from Rushford, Minnesota. So what classes in high school or college should I take, or what class do you wish you would have taken?
Great question, Kale. How old are you? What grade are you in?
I'm in 6th grade, and I'm 12 years old.
Outstanding. All right, so in 6th grade, just starting to be able to take over the operation. I know your dad, Kale. I mean, it's just a matter of time. We're looking for a replacement for him, too, but... yeah, you got to get smart first. So what classes, Rob, would you recommend taking for somebody that wants to farm someday or be an agronomist?
Well, I may be a little bit biased, but the soils class that I took in college surprisingly was one that I hated in the moment, but found out to be actually quite good and very important to what I do today. And I think everybody in this place would agree that you can't get enough of that information, so that would be one for me.
Yeah, for me it's math and science. There's a lot of math that we're doing all the time on the farm. And then you look at science, whether it's chemistry or biology, those things have been invaluable for me. And then the other thing too, learn a lot on your farm. My dad told me this when I was growing up. He said, Darren, the reason that you're going to school and you're working hard at that is you got to learn to work hard and you got to learn how to study, because your whole life you're never going to quit learning. And I think that's important. My dad now is 77 years old, and he's still reading and learning things every day. He's still sharing stuff with Brian and me on a regular basis of, hey, have you guys looked at this? I'm reading about this study over here, or this farmer over here that's doing this. My dad's retired. He's still learning. So just get that in your mind that, you know what, you're never going to know it all. You're always going to have to keep learning. And so do everything you can in school. I like math and science a lot. When you get a chance to take ag classes, that's awesome. I mean, that's an obvious no-brainer. You definitely want to do that. Be involved in FFA and 4-H and those kind of opportunities when you can. And then just try to learn stuff on the farm. So for me, my dad let me do a lot of work in our livestock operation where I even got to the point of I'd help him pick out what livestock we were going to buy and those kinds of things. So I was involved as much as I could be. So I spend as much time as you can and try and learn what you can. The other thing is, your dad's a smart guy. You can learn a lot from him. But you've got some pretty smart neighbors around you, too, and some pretty smart relatives. You want to learn from them as well, because sometimes they do things a little bit different. And it's kind of nice to see, oh, well, why did you make that choice and just ask the why? I'm always curious about the whys. Thanks a lot, Kale. Really appreciate it. All right. And again, yeah, if you've got a question, we got one right in the back over here. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun trying to learn different things on the farm. We can catch that one back there, Lindsay. You know, today, Rob, I think some of the soil fertility things were interesting because fertilizer is a big input cost for farmers, and trying to get the most out of that cost is one of the things that we probably get a lot of questions about. We talked about different forms of fertility and which could save you money, different placements that might save you money too. So we'll get into that as we go on today. Let's take another question.
My question has to do with here when we talk about crop needs. We're labeled in here where we have phosphates and we have potassium at K2O and we have phosphate. But when you buy the fertilizer, they rate it in, like if you got 18, 46, 0, that's 46% phosphorus, not 46-phosphate. Now, what I'm getting at is what is the real requirements for the crop as in P and K, not K2O or alike?
Actually, the stuff you buy is in P2O5 or K2O.
Yeah, this is one of the things that's kind of misinformation in agriculture. And I agree. I thought the same thing. I thought, oh, man, if I'm buying 0060, it's 60% K. No, it's 60% K2O potassium. And 18460 is 46% phosphate. So there is a conversion between phosphate and phosphorus. That number is 2.3. So if it's 46% phosphate, that means it's only 20% phosphorus. And with 0060, it's 60% K2O potassium, but you have to divide that by 1.2. It's actually only 50% potassium. So it's interesting. It's a little tricky, too. And what agronomists will do, like you notice on our sheets there, we've got ratings in phosphate and K2O potassium. That's why, because that's how they're selling the fertilizer to us in those forms as well.
Right. Yeah, and that conversion to part per million is a thing that we see on your soil test. Will be parts per million a lot of times, but you'll actually be applying it as K2O or P2O5. So it does hang people up. And when you're trying to move like phosphate, this is how you can pour phosphate on a field for years and never see your test move hardly at all, is because you're only putting 20% of what you actually think as element P. It's all going out as P2O5.
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there that there's things that we grew up thinking or grew up hearing, and they just turn out to be a little bit different. And trying to understand all those is super important when it comes to farming. That's why getting more education on certain things is really valuable for us. Some of that may be a workshop like today's 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Now workshop that we're broadcasting live from in Rochester, Minnesota. We'll get right back taking more questions from our audience here after this. Stay tuned.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation, and patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from Rochester, Minnesota, following an Ag PhD 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Now workshop. Let's take our next question here.
I'm from central Minnesota. I'm just wondering about pre-spray for spring wheat.
Okay. What can you use pre and spring? Wait, what are your worst weed issues that you're going after? Is it more grass like wild oats, or is it more broadleaves like kochia and others?
Yeah, it's more broadleaf, kochia, and some grass issues also.
Okay. Well, there's a few different choices there. One thing that we're seeing in some of these heavy kochia areas, especially Roundup-resistant kochia, obviously we don't have Roundup to spray in wheat, but we had trouble with it in soybeans or something else before. Now we've got to fight it in our wheat. We're seeing guys go with Sharpen as a pre-emerge. In wheat, you can use a couple of ounces, which is really powerful, and that's been great for those broadleaf weeds. The downside is it doesn't get the grasses. So if you need something for the grasses, we've got a lot of guys that will kind of go on the cheap side and use like the old Everest chemistry that would be in a product like Prepare. In a high pH soil. Many of the growers are cutting the rate back to 2/10 of an ounce rather than 3/10 of an ounce and saving a little money there because it's more active in those high pH soils. In low pH soils, most of the growers we're seeing run with a full labeled rate of 0.3 ounces of Prepare. That's an ALS chemistry, so it's not going to get your kochia, but it's going to do a nice job on some of your grasses, your foxtails, even wild oats. So that'll help you out that way. So for pre-emerge, you could run a combination of those two, or you could pick one or the other depending on what's worse in your field. Let's have another question.
Harold Tomford, Zumbrota, Minnesota, about 25 miles north of here. You're bragging about you increased your capacity, your combine, by 50%, but I'd like to have you ask you how much you figure the soil compaction cost you this fall.
Great question. Okay, so for those of you listening today, we talked about at our workshop about adding a grain cart and how if you kept your combine running and just picked up with the grain cart so the combine operator never had to stop, you can actually improve the productivity of that combine by about 50%. The downside of that is if you're running a grain cart all over willy-nilly through the field, you're going to create a whole bunch of compaction. And on a year like this year, where it was super wet, especially where you're farming, my goodness, you guys had some moisture this year. You probably left some big ruts out there, no doubt about it. So you got to be smart. Maybe you've got the grain cart on tracks. Maybe you're going to just run on dedicated paths. That you say, I'm running to the end of the field, and I'm not turning around until I get to the end rows. There's quite a few guys that'll do that. But you know what? Everybody's in a rush at harvest, and some guys just say, oh, I'm just going to peel off and cut kitty corner across the field or however I need to get to that truck faster. If you do that, compaction can definitely be an issue. There's no question about that. Okay, let's take another question here. Okay.
This is Tom from Wisconsin. I have a question on herbicide application. Let's say you're putting dual down pre-emerge before soybeans, and you want to come back with another group 15. Is it important to come back with dual, for example, or if you came back with warrant, would that make a difference?
Good question. What do you recommend, Rob, normally?
Well, I guess, you know, I guess for me personally, I usually haven't. I've been trying to not use as much dual for most of my customers, and the main reason being is dual is a really good grass product, and it's not the best broadleaf product, especially late in the season on an early application. So my personal feeling is the harness, which acetachlor, which is in the warrant, has looked better. So I've did more work with like my authorities and things like that down in beans and then come back with the warrant as a second option for late post.
Nope, that's not my question. My question is, if you went with dual, should you come back post-emergence with dual?
Should you stay with the same group 15 or should you rotate? You know what? Here's my concern, and I would say this. If it's labeled, then so be it. Go ahead and do it. I think if you're doing any tillage at all, you can do trifluralin cheaper than a dual or any of the group 15s, and trifluralin's a way better product. So I would certainly do that instead. Now, if you don't like that yellow, then I guess you're opting for something different. Or if you're in no-till, then you'd probably opt to something like Prowl. But if you're going to use a group 15 down, I would suggest just using it once per year. And since that's the best residual one that we can use post, I like to use it post instead. What I'm concerned about is in a corn-soybean rotation, we're using group 15s for our grass control. Now on soybeans, if we're using it twice, we're going to burn that chemistry up quick. So I'd prefer to just use it once from a crop safety standpoint, but also just for keeping that chemistry around for a long time and avoiding resistance. I don't know that if you use metolachlor pre, that it would make any difference if you used acetachlor or metolachlor post. I don't think that would make any difference.
It is a different mode. I mean, it's a little different chemistry. It does show more broadleaf control. So that would be the only thing I could see.
So, okay, so that'd be Rob's point then. If you're using Metolachlor, you're going to get good grass control pre, maybe use acetachlor post. Okay, let's see. Where's our next one at here? Over here, yes.
On the seed singulation, awesome. Would it be better with limited funds for my planter because it's so big, should I put on the down pressure hydraulics or should I use the seed singulation? What's the better way to go? What would be better bang for the buck?
Hydraulic down pressure is tough to argue against. That's a.
I already have air springs or airbags.
Airbags. You're talking active down pressure, up pressure then?
Yes.
You move to the full.
State of the art, 2020.
Yeah.
Man, I like that.
I would say that you're probably getting great singulation with your meters anyway. Most meters on the factory settings are still quite good. Be a Pro 40 Deer or a precision meter. So I'm all in on that active downforce. I've seen us plant to some situations we shouldn't even have gotten crop out of the ground.
You would never do that. You would be in perfect conditions every time you're planting, I'm sure. But yeah, we like that. We like that downforce.
And you get that seeding just right. And it's a big deal. And especially active upforce. Our planter picks up more than it's pushing down because we have uneven levels of softness in the soil.
Well, and everybody's got variable soil types across your field. I mean, it's just going to be their variable moisture conditions, variable soil types. It just makes all the sense in the world. And then, so this year, say you do that. That is a big investment. I get it. If there's any way you can see what you're getting for a yield gain, if there's any way, if you're running two planters to say, let's put it on one and compare, or let's run, have my neighbor run his planter first, and then I'll run with that next, and we'll see how it does. Get some comparisons, because it is a nice return on investment, and then you'll know for sure, rather than just, well, I had 200 bushel corn last year, I got 200 bushel corn this year, I didn't gain. That's not a fair comparison, because we all know the years are so different. You can't really compare one year to the next, but comparing with and without is tough when you switch the whole thing over, but that's just the way it is. With the singulation, I would also say just walk your fields this year, take a look at it, see what you're getting for singulation, and then, like I had mentioned at the workshop today, count pods on those plants and just see, all right, let's look at my soybean plant here. I got perfect spacing. It's got the exact amount of inches between that and any other plant, how many pods are on it, and then where I doubled up, what do I have for pod counts there? And then even add it up on those doubles between the two plants. Does it even add up to the one? That would be interesting to take a look at. Yeah. Let's take another question.
Hi, Dwayne from Minnesota. I'm curious on how many nitrogen passes you do in a season and the variance between dry versus liquid.
Okay, how many passes do we make in a year? Generally, two.
Two.
Now, we've got fairly heavy dirt, and we've got normally low rainfall. But I know we've talked to some growers here at the workshop today that have very light soils, and on those, I would never think of doing that. I would put on more passes. The big key is looking at your cation exchange capacity for your soil. Let's just say that it's 20, and that's a moderately heavy soil. Well, you take that 20 times 10, we think you can hold roughly 200 pounds at a time. If you need 250 pounds, we'd recommend splitting it into two apps. If you only need 150 pounds, in most cases, we'd say, yeah, you're okay if you want to put it in one shot. I think you may get a better gain if you put it in multiple shots, but you don't have to.
Yeah, and your liquid versus dry question.
We had about 20 seconds to
it. Yeah, I'll try to go quick here. I guess the big thing is to try to balance that out is hard, but it's really about the componentry. So you got urea, ammonium nitrate, UAN. Ammonium nitrate is really good.
Let's talk about that a little more after this break. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at acceleronsas.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions. Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting live from Rochester, Minnesota today, following an Ag PhD workshop called 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Now. We're taking questions from our audience here. Let's get right back to it.
Hi, my name is Paul from Minnesota. My question is regarding a product you've talked about in the past called Decomp. And
Now we're in trouble, Paul, because if you would have brought up drainage tile and my brother was here, that would be the end of it. I could just take my headset off. I'm not going to be able to talk for a while. Now you talk about Decomp, and I happen to have Rob Fritz here who has done a lot of work with that, a lot of testing with that product. So I can pretty much just sit back for the next 10 minutes here. What's your questions?
I've heard that you are the guy to ask, so that's why we're asking this question. My question is, if we apply that to turkey litter coming out of the barn, can we take that right to the field and spread it and not end up with a bunch of nitrogen tie-up in the wood shavings? Or does that need to go to a pile and sit for a while and work?
Yeah.
How would you do it? Would you spray it on the manure before you do anything to it?
Yeah, I would say you have two parts of that question. The first part is you can absolutely apply it and take it to the field immediately. There's no negative to that. You can take it there, and as soon as it hits the soil, it's going to start its process. I mean, it's going to start taking and breaking down residue that it's finding. It's going to hold nitrogen because there's a carbon-based source in there that's going to sequester that free nitrogen. So all the actions that you would really want to have would start immediately, okay? But the second part of your question is the actual, you know, what's going to happen to the wood chips and the breakdown. For that to really happen, we have to get that pile. Because inside that pile, we can get the anaerobic conditions it requires for the breakdown to really get going. Okay? Now, that's going to happen in the soil, but it's going to happen much quicker if we don't spread it out. Now, one of the keys is we do like a drier condition for that operation to go and happen. So like what we ran into this year is we had, you know, twice or half again the rainfalls, and sometimes the piles would get so wet that the temperature couldn't rise in the pile sufficiently, and we couldn't get the anaerobic breakdown that we were after. Now, the bugs are still there, and as soon as you apply them to the field, they take off, and they start doing their job, but they will kind of hold them up. So does that answer your question?
So how long in the pile would it need to sit?
It depends on the how much your percentage of like the wood in there is and what you've got in there and how many, because it varies from sample to sample.
But you've got nitrogen and you've got that really good carbon source with the wood. There's definitely going to be some breakdown. I mean, you got the ingredients, right?
45 days has been a general kind of, that's what we see. And the winter months are actually better than the summer months because we tend to be drier. And so when you get a snowfall, it gets hot. It just vaporizes off and it doesn't penetrate the pile and slow down the heat process. But 45 days has been our target. And then by the end of that, everything kind of slows down. Yep.
Okay, great. Let's take another question.
Hi, Jim Jacobson from New Richland, Minnesota. Brian, you kind of sparked my interest. You said about planting beans before corn. I was thinking about maybe doing 20 acres or so. But you said you used the corn cells to plant the soybeans?
Yeah, the whole idea was to use the 2020, you know, the 2020 monitor to actually count to make sure we're getting our skips and our multiples counted. The only way to do that was to run it in corn mode and with the corn meters. Because the 2020 will actually watch that for you if you tell it it's doing corn. So, and then he could adjust vacuum pressures and make sure that we were doing the best job we could with skips and multiples.
And you said you're about 105 population or so?
On that one, and you can try some different populations. Actually, the grower thought that was too much.
Yeah.
That population. Can you do that? I mean, can you run? Well, you can run as low as you want, I guess, if you're calling it corn and running through that monitor.
You just slow down. You know, he was going 2.5 miles an hour, two and a half, to get so the meters weren't overspeeding, and they were still able to count. But that 56-cell meter is going to change that because you go from a 20 – I think it's 24 to 56, so our meter speed is going to slow down, so then we have more, or the motor speed, so then we have more ability to work within a wider spectrum of drop rate. But we still have to convince that monitor to count, and it won't do that on the soybean setting. And then he didn't have to clean his or change all his things out, so because we did that and then we went to corn. And then we came back and finished the beans. So that way he never had to change meters or anything. We just emptied out the planter, put the corn in, planted corn.
Yeah, and then let's just say that you were going to plant corn on April 15th on your farm. Maybe on April 14th, stick that 20 acres of beans in and just see what happens. And then you're not messing up anything else on your farm. You just, hey, I'll try 20 acres over there and see how it works. All right, good questions. Thank you. Let's take another question over here.
Yeah, I'm Bill from southeast Minnesota here. Last fall, my neighbor wanted to harvest my corn stalks. In return, he would haul manure back. Sounded like a pretty good deal to me.
Yep.
Was it?
Probably.
Absolutely, it was a good deal.
I mean,
did he charge you for the manure? Oh, you
perfect.
You do it every year.
I like that.
As long as he does a good job of spreading it
out. I had a question yesterday. I had a farmer, and he said, all right, I've got a guy next to me, and he's got a dairy, and he wants my corn stalks. He's going to use it for bedding, and then he's going to spread them all back out on my field. What do you think of that deal? And I said, so he takes your corn stalks off. You don't have to pay for that, right? Nope. He goes out and does it. Cool. Then he puts it in for bedding. Yep. And then the cattle, do they go outside and do their thing? Nope, they do it right on the stalks. So you get all that manure for free when he puts the stalks back. Yep. Like, wow, I love this deal. So your net loss in the farm is nothing. And your net gain is all the manure from those dairy cattle over the winter. I like your deal. You got a good deal. And you know what? It's one of those things where, hey, it helps out the dairy guy and it helps out you. It's a win-win. That's awesome. So, yeah, in your case, love it. As long as that manure comes back, and it's great. Yep, good question. Let's take another one over here.
Rich from Minnesota. I put on 200 pounds of starter now in a 2x2. I was just wondering, would it pay to try a pop-up fertilizer in furrow along with that?
So you're doing a 2x2 on one side of the row?
Yes.
Okay, and when you say 200 pounds, what are you putting out?
It'd be 923.30.
Okay, so roughly 20 gallons of that?
No, it's dry.
It's a dry? Okay.
Oh, dry.
So 200 pounds of a dry 923.30.
Yeah. I seriously doubt, in my estimation, that you're going to see a lot. I guess the only thing I would throw in there, I mean, you could. I personally would be looking at, like, maybe delivering a biological, something like that. You know, you could see a little pop on a really cool spring for having a readily available nutrient right by the seed. But I would say that would fade as soon as the spring temperatures come in. Otherwise, once that sideband's going to be there by the time that little root goes over and finds it, and it'll tap into it very quickly. So I would say I wouldn't lose a lot of sleep over it, because you are pretty close to that. It'd be just, if you're a guy that plants in April, then I'd be more considered with it. Or an early plant.
I like having the in-furrow if you're an early plant guy, because we like putting on insecticide and fungicide in-furrow as well. And a lot of times we'll have a biological that, if you've got the option of, I can do a 2x2 or I can do in-furrow, you can keep that away from your fungicide if you need to or something like that. It gives you options. So I like having the option, and especially early season, like Rob said, to get a good start. That's great. If you're planting in May, normally, it's not as big a deal.
Yep. Thank you.
Take another question over here. Oh, tell you what. We'll take your question, then we'll probably answer it right after the break.
Okay, Aaron from Minnesota. What is your experience on manure applied before soybean crop?
Ooh, manure applied before soybean crop. If it's legal in your area to do that, we've had some nice gains. We really have. The only thing that we've had to watch out for has been white mold. We put a lot of manure on. A lot of times we'll end up with some white mold, and we'll also maybe end up with some insects from time to time too. So as long as you're managing disease and insects from a nutritional standpoint, I think it's fine.
If you're composting, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we may talk about the nitrogen portion of that right after this break. We're broadcasting live from Rochester, Minnesota, following an Ag PhD workshop. If you're interested in coming to one of our workshops, you can find all the details and pre-register at agphd.com. Stay tuned.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
We started utilizing the Duo React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting live from Rochester, Minnesota, following an Ag PhD workshop called 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Now. Now, one of those ways is consider using manure or compost if you can save some money versus commercial fertilizer. And one of the things that we run into with that is the question that we had just before the break. What about the nitrogen component, where you got a bunch of N in there and now you're going to plant soybeans? They're going to get tall and probably excessively tall. That could be an issue.
Yeah, and it really could be, especially if we, you know, we have a big onslaught of that N or a big push of N early in the season. And that promotes, you know, extra growth on that soybean plant. One of the things that we've done is we put on compost, which your N is stabilized. There's no free N. It's all organic N. And then once you've moved your manure from manure to compost, actually soybeans are a great fit because that N is coming on late in the season, which after flowering N promotes protein. And protein, I mean, that's what a soybean is. It's a protein machine, is how much protein can we get. Seed size, seeds per plant, and yield. So that actually fits very good.
So, yeah, you may just do some composting of that manure if that's at all possible. That'd be awesome, especially if it's a dry manure. That'd be easier to do.
Easier to do.
All right, let's take another question here. Let's see, where's Dave?
I have one. Andy from Southeast Minnesota. What are your opinions on cover crops?
Love them. But not in all situations. You know, in on our farm, for example, let's say that we harvested corn this year and it was November and we've already had snow and it's too cold and it's frozen. Well, that didn't work for us. Also, I had a grower today at the workshop that his crop got too big early in the season because we had all that heat and moisture early. He went into interseed cover crop and he couldn't get it established because he had crop canopy too quick. It's not the easiest thing to do. It's not push the easy button in the north. So there's a lot of trial work being done of, okay, if we can get corn past a foot tall, now we're kind of past that critical weed-free time where we lose yield to weeds. Maybe we can interseed crop at that point, get it established before the canopy, and then later in the season, once we've harvested, we'll have some cover crop already started. That may be an option, but if we're limited for moisture some year and we get in a drought, well, that's not going to be easy either. So there isn't a perfect system for this. If we were in a three-crop rotation and you're harvesting wheat in July here, I would say 100% cover crop. You're going to love it. It's going to be awesome. We just need to get a rain to get it started, which we will in July or August, get at least one, and we'd be golden. So, you know, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, and there have been a lot of failures, and even the guys that are successful at it say, well, every so often we have a failure with it because we didn't get the right moisture or the right weather or whatever. I think the seed-to-soil contact is really underrated, though. When we can do it with a seeder of some sort, we get so much better take than when we do the aerial seeding. And I know a lot of the aerial guys will say, well, we're doing it with cereal rye, and that one doesn't – it's not as fussy. But it still likes it if you could get good seed-to-soil contact. So there, it just isn't a perfect system, other than if you're in a three-crop situation where wheat comes off, you can drill it in. Like you'll notice at the Ag PhD Field Day, we do that every year. We harvest the small grains. We drill in cover crop right away. It's awesome. Normally, I mean, even the stuff that we harvested within a week of the field day, we've got cover crop up already within a week because we've got moisture, we've got heat. It's awesome.
The following silage is one of the ones, too, that, I mean, I've had a lot of success with the
guys.
Yeah,
like for the last question of, hey, they're going to bail up my stalks and take those and then trade them out for manure later. Awesome. When they bail the stalks off, I'd have the planter right after that or the drill right after that, seed some cover crop in. That'd be tremendous.
It's too late.
Yeah, by the time they get out there and get going, I get you. Yeah, but with silage, I guess that'd be better. You're right.
Yeah, no, silage guys have had a lot of success. We've did a lot of work with that. And then following oats, the few guys that do oats actually is a excellent rotational crop. Say you've got, I had a guy that had to do a lot of tile work. Like he was going to tear every piece of tile that was basically in his ground out and redo it because he wanted to change all his outlets. And he went and planted oats. And then we actually cover cropped the oats. You just cut them. They restooled back up and we put some, I think it was radishes and turnips in with them and then let them grow. And then he put all his tile in and then ran his cows in after that. It was beautiful. He said it was the most money he made on an acre in his life because he didn't have to buy feed for his cattle. He got the oats and then he also got the tile done. Couldn't beat it. So that's a three crop rotation option. And then he saved oats back for the next year. And then he had oats for the next field he was moving to. And then he did all his work in the summer when it was 75 degrees instead of 17 or 7. So it actually worked pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think a lot of this stuff is just trying something different. Don't be afraid to try something different. If you can think it through, okay, what are the pros and cons, and talk to some other people about it instead of just, oh, that's crazy. Why? Well, what wouldn't work with that system? Yeah. That sounds pretty good to me. Let's take another question.
I'm Kim Foley, Cass in Minnesota here. Work with a number of farmers that were unable to get hog buildings emptied this fall.
Yes.
And with our rules, NPDS after December 1st couldn't do it, so they're going to have to empty in the spring apply. And I was kind of wondering for this, because you're running the compaction, but as soon as we can incorporate, will that impact yields, or should it be ahead of corn or soybeans with the spring application? It would be incorporated in probably about 4,500 gallons per acre.
Here's the good thing, Ken. The weather forecast right now, based on Darren Hefty's early prediction, is we're going to have a very warm and dry March. And nobody's going to have any trouble. It's going to be great. We're going to be spreading manure all through March. The soil will be dry. There won't be any frost left. It's going to be a miracle. That would be awesome because everybody in our area is stuck in the same boat. If they did get some pumped out, it was just enough to be able to get by till spring. So if we have a year like last year where we get 30 inches of snow in April, we're going to be in trouble. So, you know, when we look at it, Rob, let's just say we have an average spring. Let's say it's an average spring, and it starts to warm up, and it's April 1st, and guys want to get going. What are you going to do with your guys? You got a lot of guys that have livestock.
Yeah, we have a lot of guys in this situation. We had guys that were running around just pumping enough room. You know, it was actually coming through the slots, and it was kind of a disaster. The take home that I've got is we're going to aim for every acre of corn we can get done. Because the beans, there's too many risks, and in some places it's not even legal. Obviously, we may have to rethink our corn hybrid choices. And I think the one thing that I learned from like being around Randy Doughty and some of these high yield guys when they come in and to our field day is we're not even touching the capacity of yield of the hybrids that we're planting today. So don't be scared if you have to get this job done to go to a 92 or 94 day hybrid, because unless you're getting 400 bushel out of it, you haven't got the most out of your 100 day.
Yeah, you aren't going to be capped by a little earlier
and
hybrid.
I know that planting days are important, but usually we run into corn because guys don't shorten the hybrid, okay, to compensate for their plant time because they took 105 day because it yielded more last year. But this might be a whole different scenario. And yes, we want that in, but we don't want to screw up the ground getting it, because every one of you guys know if you plant into a bad situation with corn, you're going to end up with a bad situation on the backside. So we got to slow down. We got to speed up by slowing down, making good decisions. We've got a pit that we've got to take two fields out of across the way that I think if you threw a rock in it today, it would come out the other side. It's that close to coming out. It's a 5 million gallon lagoon, and I think there's 8 or so million gallons in it right now. And
it's maxing out.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And it's right across the road from our farms. We'd agreed to take the manure in the fall, and their guy that comes and pumps the manure, he's like, well, I can't get to you because I got this situation with the hog guys, and we got to get just enough so they can keep going. And so everybody was pulling together, and the dairy guy said, you know what? Help those guys out first. We'll work to get by. And so, yeah, we're in the same boat. We got to do some of this on our farm. And fortunately, it'll be corn where we're going to go with that. But we got to have good conditions in the spring to get it all done. Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting live from Rochester, Minnesota, and we'll be right back after this.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from Rochester, Minnesota, following an Ag PhD workshop. And we've got more workshops coming up and more places we'll be at this winter. You can check out where Brian and I will be speaking, and maybe it's someplace close to you or someplace that's easy to get to at agphd.com. Just click on the events tab. You can pre-register there and see all the places that we're going to be. And hopefully it works out for you to come and spend a day with us as well. We got some questions left here in the audience. Let's hit one over here.
Hi, I'm Rob from Southeast Minnesota. Here in the Mississippi River corridor, they're really pushing the cover crops. Can a guy get benefit from going to shorter season hybrids and varieties to get increased benefits from the cover crops instead of, like, you know, you're saying it's weather related, which it is. You know, can a guy harvest earlier to get better benefits from the cover crop? Will that offset?
Well, okay, let's say, for example, you're going to harvest corn at 24% instead of letting it go down to 18. I think you're way dollars ahead doing that. I'm all for that. Now, if you said, I got to take it at 30, I'd say, not so big of a fan of taking it at 30%. But taking it at 24, that would be okay. And the other thing, you know, when you talk about maturity length for hybrids, I think on your farm, you've got to do some testing every year and spread your risk out a little bit. And maybe what you do is you say, you know what, I like to plant 100-day corn. Let's just use that as an example. And my full season's 104, and my early season's 96, and you plant a little bit of each. On that 96, you can get started a little bit earlier, hopefully. And on that 96, yep, you start seeding. But then about the time you're done with that, then the 100 days ready, and then you jump into that, and then about the time you get that seeded again, then the 104 days ready, and you keep moving. So you can kind of step things out. I think too often we get stuck into, well, I'm going to take a whole slug of that 100 day because that's my best number, and then everything's ready at the same time. And it just gets to be a nightmare at harvest with all the things you want to get done.
I don't know. I guess my thing, too, is one of the things I'd like to invent is, you know, one of the greatest inventions that I think has happened in the last 10 years is a 2020 monitor. Not because of what it tells you that it's you're doing right, is it what it tells you you're doing wrong. And it, that screen that tells you
so you're a glass half empty kind of guy.
Well, no, but it's barking at you, you're screwing up, right? But when your yield monitor
great.
Goes into
so I got that and I got my brother.
Right,
man.
Right.
And I just can't win.
Well, but the thing about this is what I'm saying is the yield monitor lies to you a little bit. You focus on the dry bushel, but a lot of times, how many dollars are you giving away in drying costs to get that dry bushel? And I find a lot of guys getting confused by their 108, 109 days in our country, out yielding their 102s, but if they put the pen and pencil to it with shrink and dry down, they actually lost money on the 108. It might have yielded more, but it yielded more water. But the monitor is just telling them that they got a better yield. And I think that's one of the things we have to, you know, factor into this whole thing very well, because a lot of times we're not factoring that in. It's because if you take that out 10 days sooner or 15 days sooner so you can get an access to, you know, this cover crop, you might find that that 108 day, it doesn't even have a prayer compared to the 98 day to pull off that, you know, if that's your that's what you're trying to do. So just something to think about.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of things in the corn industry that have been thought to be, well, here's how you get higher yield. Let's plant later day corn and let's plant higher population. And I think both of those are sometimes wrong.
The later days usually do carry a little more yield, but at a price of moisture. And, you know, depending on your system, are you doing it yourself or are you paying for it the elevator? It can actually be pretty costly. That extra bushel might cost you money. Because I always like, I think that's one of the things that I'd like to invent. I probably gave it away now. One of you guys will beat me to it, but whatever. But I think that's a good, that would be a good thing to evaluate your hybrids more effectively.
All right, let's take another question.
Just checking with you on planter fertilizer placement. I got rebounders now with a splitter on, using ag liquid products, so I'm not worried about what's going in the furrow.
Sure.
There's always new stuff coming out. They got totally tubular and different products. Is there a difference in, like, the splitters will probably put the fertilizer above the seed or the totally tubular be below? Any issue with the seed getting in contact with the fertilizer with the starter? It's like, say, it's all ag liquid, so it's
I'm not too worried about that setup, to be honest with you. I think there's maybe other places I'd put my first investment dollar into to improve on the planter. But what do you think about some of the other delivery systems, Rob?
I think that those delivery systems were developed to put a high salt product near a seed and get away with it. Not necessarily the best idea. And I think if you were trying to deliver, you know, herbicide, or not herbicide, but insecticide or extra fungicide, those kind of things, I kind of prefer them to be just above the seed. So your delivery system is great, but the guys, you know, a lot of times we're trying to move that away from the seed with the fertilizer just so we can use a higher salt load product and get away with it. So I think that I would actually prefer it to be over the top if I was putting extra stuff in the container.
Okay, let's take another question.
Yeah, I want to switch here. Kevin from Iowa. The new GT and GL hybrids coming out.
Yep.
With the soybeans. I've talked to guys that are going to mix Roundup and Liberty together and do a one pass. Or do you spray Roundup first, Liberty second, Liberty first, Roundup second?
Oh, man, you're going to make Rob's head pop off and shaking sideways so fast saying no. Yep. So, Rob, talk about it.
Well, here's the thing is we got to think about how the mode of action of the products are. And, you know, I have a high rate of concern. I don't like Xtend with Roundup, okay, because you got
doesn't
two.
Like spraying the dicamba I like and to the spray glyphosate it at the same time.
Straight. I'll put Warrant in the Xtend, but we found on the farm through multiple tests, and I'll fight with the guys from both companies on this, you spray it with Roundup, the Roundup has a mode of action. You're trying to grow that product to death with the Xtend, and then you got something that shuts it down in as fast as it possibly can. Those two are not together. Now you have Liberty. 3 hours, the action of Liberty is over, but then you're going to put a product Roundup in that takes 3 days to translocate? I just don't see where these things are going to work. And I know they might work or get by, but to me it just isn't, it isn't something that, those aren't a package deal that I'm concerned that we're not going to do well with.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I also think that trait is going to be short-lived. And the reason why I say that is if Enlist gets approved in the Philippines, which is the last hurdle that's got, now you've got Roundup, Liberty, and Enlist.
And I still want to separate them.
Which that's fine.
Because
now you can use Liberty in one pass, right, and you can use the 2,4-D choline in another pass, and you've got effective modes of action in controlling Roundup-resistant weeds. So, I mean, adding Roundup to it is okay, I guess, if you get some escape grasses, but for some of these problem Roundup-resistant weeds, I love having multiple modes of action that we can use.
Because sometimes those modes of actions are not, you know, like atrazine and the HPPDs, fantastic combination. We know they work better together than separate. In this case, I just don't think they're, you know, they work together very well.
All right, let's take another one back here.
Hi, Jared from Southeast Minnesota. Could you guys talk a little bit about the difference on corn planters of closing wheels? There's all kinds of different packages and stuff, and
well, there sure
any differences are. You're seeing.
You know, it's kind of fun because a lot of times we'll have different companies talk to us. What are you guys running on there? And then you should try ours. And so we end up putting a different system on one row. And, man, it's amazing how many times you can pick that one row out, good or bad, through the season. So this is a part that you could actually just put on one row if you wanted to. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, we've done a lot of testing like that. I would say most of the innovation there is innovation spurred on by planting into crappy soil conditions.
We can handle mud. We can handle soup, you know.
But should you be, right, you know, and that's what we see all the time. You know, we've tested a lot of them, and they do work well. But I question when they're working well if we should be planting. So that's the problem. Yeah. But there are some pretty good ones. The one that I like that we've had is it's got a walking system on it now, and I can't remember the name, but it keeps it parallel. And so we've seen that, and we thought that looked pretty good. But the name escapes me because I'm not an equipment guy. But if Glenn was here, he'd be able to tell you which one it was.
Oh, yeah, he'd be all over that. You know, yeah, I know. There's so many things that go into putting in a crop. And today we were talking about 101 ways to cut farm expenses now. And everybody's looking at how do I keep my costs down yet still maximize my profitability. And there's a lot of things. And I think it's a challenge for all of us as farmers to try not to be wasteful. And I get it when that one little brief moment in our lives where corn prices or whatever crop you're growing were actually really high for a little bit, that was kind of fun. And oftentimes we get wasteful if it's easy to make money. And then you get a year like this year where making money on the farm is going to be a challenge. There's no doubt about it. We've got to look at everything that we're doing on the farm with fresh eyes and see, are we truly making the best decisions? Or is there a way I could do it a little bit cheaper and get the same job done? Well, thanks to everybody who is at our workshop today. Really appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who asked questions at our for our radio show. And thanks to all of you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.